being humble. I think somebody being somebody who's just about it, doesn't talk about it, is just about it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I always think, you know, if you're on fire, you don't have to tell somebody you're on fire. They just see it. You know, they just know it. So it's like, you don't have to, don't talk about how awesome you are. Just be awesome. And people will just see that.
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Pulling up the notes here. Hold on. I don't know why I'm going Jersey on you. Firehouse Vigilance. It is the weekly, 100% the weekly scrap coming at you. A whole bunch of freaking morons dialing in, checking in. We got Brent, his name is Brent Fenton, on the weekly scrap this week. And that's really all I... Oh my, how do you make this work? I don't understand. Hold up. That's all I got. Okay. Sorry, I wanted to lead off with my terrible Firefighter Fenton imitation. So there it was. We'll see if anybody actually comments. Weekly Scrap, number 145. My guest tonight is none other than Brent Fenton. Of course, he is best known for his giant rust-colored mustache and the character known as Firefighter Fenton. He is a career fire captain paramedic with more than 18 years of experience in Arizona. He has been married to Mrs. Firefighter Fenton for 12 years, and they have 4 children. He has a passion for comedy, he has a passion for music, and he uses those passions to create content and absolutely bring a lot of insight into the fire service and keep it entertaining. He has a gift, and I am proud to have him on the scrap for an awesome conversation. Welcome my brother Brent Fenton to Weekly Scrap number 145.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for putting up with my awesome Firefighter Fenton imitation.
I've heard worse.
Okay. Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Now, here's the deal. I really wanted a red mustache, and apparently Brent has bought every red mustache on Amazon because the next ones come in on a container ship in December. So, all right, here we go. People are already chiming in.
All right.
Let's go from Daniel Harris. I must ask you a question. That of course, had to be said. What up, fellas? Keep it salty. Tom Amherst said, sup, gents. That's from Will Simmons. Oh, yeah, man. Funniest dude around. Respect from Steve Kaiser. My wife actually chimed in and said, the fact that you've been excited for a week to wear that mustache, so glad you had the moment. I really wish I had more. But anything I missed in the intro, anything you would like to add?
No, I think that was good. I think you nailed it. So, yeah. You made me sound cooler than I am, I think.
You are very generous. I wanted to say freaking morons, and I wanted to get it right. But
come on, morons.
There it is. Thank you. Audience, get your questions primed and ready for Fenton. This one should get interesting. Kyle Romagus is the unofficial/official producer of the scrap. He will be fielding your questions and throwing them at me. Other than that, man, I want to start off right out the gate and get to the questions and say, I want to start with young Brent and sort of take us down the road of what has made you, you. Were you just a class clown when you were younger? Did this come, were you the last of 13 children and needed attention? I mean, just go for it.
Well, you know, so there's only 2 kids in my family, just me and my older sister. She's also a firefighter. But we come from a family of law enforcement, born and raised Phoenix, Arizona. I think what really started it was that I was born with, red hair and freckles. So, that was survive or be eaten alive, you know? So,
right.
No. My dad, he's the OG Fenton. He's hilarious. Any of the funniness that I got, or the comedic side of me, I definitely got from him. But definitely, you know, having red hair as a kid is cool until you're like 8, and then there's some character building years, and then and then you're fine.
right. And then you're you.
That's where I learned how to beat people to the punch. So, you know.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Pulling it up.
So yeah, but no, yeah, born and raised, like I said, in Arizona. My whole family is law enforcement, and then my dad was like, "Don't do this. Go be a firefighter." So I went on a ride along with some of his buddies, and then the rest was history, man. So yeah, I always enjoyed making people laugh, and I always grew up having family or friends be like, "Man, you should be a comedian." And I heard that all the way through, even in my career as a firefighter. Dude, I feel like you're missing the boat. You should be a comedian. And, you know, you start to think like, did I miss my calling? You know? And then, so then I discovered social media and was like, oh, well, I could do both.
Why not both? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. So whole family law enforcement, and you feel like, their experiences, especially modern law enforcement, pushed you over the last, I mean, 20 years ago, obviously, towards the fire service.
Yeah, you know, my dad and two of his brothers, he's the youngest of four, but two of his older brothers were also police officers, and they all successfully retired. You know, nobody had any injuries or anything like that. So but my dad, he had some crazy stuff happen during his career. You know, when he first got promoted to sergeant, like 2 weeks later, one of his officers was ambushed and killed. And then his best friend, like 5 years later, was same thing. He was ambushed and killed. Both of them, Phoenix Police Department. And you know, my dad, I remember I was gung ho to be a cop. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a cop. And I was gung ho to. I love the forest. I love camping. I love the outdoors. And I wanted to do law enforcement in the forest. So I was like, I'll go be a forest ranger.
Right.
So I was on that career path. And then my dad, you know, after. Both of those, he was just like, you know what, I'm not going to your funeral. He's like, you law enforcement is not what it used to be. I've got some buddies in the fire service, go check it out. So I went on a ride along, and I always tell people I had the ultimate bait and switch, because I went on a ride along at a Phoenix station in downtown Phoenix, and the captain on the ladder truck let me ride for 24 hours, which is, you know, we don't do that, but yeah, like 2:30 in the morning, and we got popped on a structure fire and pulled out.
On your first ride along?
Very first ride along, yeah.
Nice.
Got popped on a structure fire. We pull up, and as we pull up, it spreads to the neighbor's house. So now it's a dual house fire. And I remember just watching these guys, you know, pulling lines, going in, cutting holes, doing the whole. I'm just like, this is amazing. This is what I want to do, you know. And then, like I said, it's the ultimate bait and switch, because I don't think we ran one lift assist. You know, I don't think we had like shooting, stabbing, house fire, all the stuff. You're like, man, this is awesome. This is what
this
you guys
is unreal.
Do.
That's
what they're like.
More so.
Oh yeah, this is all we do. You know, man. And then yeah, then I get hired and find out like, oh, that was an anomaly shift. You know,
they're like, this kid's the black cloud. Yes. Yeah. All right, catching you up. Yeah, there we go. Michael Lataki said, I always thought your mustache was real until my captain told me it wasn't. Laugh out loud. That's why he makes the big bucks. And Andrew McGinn said, family of law enforcement, then y'all the family that had the smart kids. Laugh out loud. So I'm sure you've never heard that before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I love it, man. I love the stories, and especially the bait and switch, because that is the ultimate.
Yeah.
There was an incident that was pretty serious for you, and I do research every time I bring a guest on, and I try to dig in and see where else you've been and ask questions. But an incident that was pretty serious for you that you kind of attribute to how you do your comedy and how you cope. But go ahead and tell the story a little bit in your own words.
Yeah. So the incident that I had, it was a structure fire. This was back in 2018. It was actually June 2nd, 2018. I remember that. I'll never forget it. But we had a, I was working on an engine. I was an acting captain at the time. I wasn't promoted yet. So I was acting, and we were in an area. So we had just merged with this town and took over them because the old fire department that they had there just had some mismanagement, and basically they were going under. And so our department ended up absorbing them, taking them over. So we were there. So we were kind of on two. So how we do things in Arizona is we have the regional dispatch, where basically there's 20, I think it's 28, 26 or 28 departments. We're all on the same. We all do the same SOPs. We have the same dispatch, same radio channels, everything.
Right.
There's this area that we took over, they were not in it. So we were, this plays into the story, we were on operating off two separate dispatch systems.
So just another domino.
Mm-hmm.
Right on.
So when we got dispatched to a, it came out as a debris fire, and it was, you know, it's June, and that day it was over 110, super dry. The monsoons don't come in until early July. So it's just, we're talking single digit humidity. And so when a debris fire kicks out, you know, we call everybody, because especially when I heard the address, I knew where it was. I knew this was going to be potentially a large, fire. And in that area, it's kind of a wildland urban interface. Sure. So there's a lot of homes, but there's a lot of wildland in between these homes. And when we pulled out, saw the column, and I could tell, okay, this is a brush fire. So I get on the radio and I call the dispatch and tell them, you know, I start adding. And so how we do things in our system is we have, you know, we'll say balance this to, you know, a 3-in-1, a working wooey or whatever. We have different, you know, terms that will signal them to dispatch certain units, so we don't have to piecemeal it. You know what I mean? So with this other dispatch system, I had a special call. Okay, I need a battalion chief. I need two additional engines, two water tenders, you know, three brush trucks. I had to like piecemeal it that way. And then I'm expecting them to translate that over to the other dispatch system, because that's where my help's coming from.
Right.
Because we're not on that system yet, because the infrastructure wasn't built yet to get us on that system. So, so that as we're responding, we're heading out. It says it's a, you know, it's a 10 by 10 or 15 by 15 debris fire, whatever. Anyway, we take off, we see the column. I can tell, okay, this is brush. We start heading through town. We go underneath the freeway. When we come on the other side of the freeway, I can see that this has now gotten into something, because it's a large black column. And so as we're pulling up, it's me and my engineer who are on the truck, and then the two firefighters. One of the firefighters is on the brush truck, and the other firefighter is on the water tender. And so they're behind us. So when we come up under the freeway, the alarm room clears me and tells me, okay, we're getting multiple calls on this. Sounds like this has gotten into a structure, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So as we're saying that, we're pulling in on scene. He's still yakking on the radio, and I'm just like, shut up, dude. I'm trying to give my on scene report. Because now I can see, okay, this is a house that is, they're on like probably an acre and a half or whatever. It looks like a freaking junkyard. There's 17 cars and three RVs and, you know, you name it, everywhere. And there's a large fire to the rear of the structure, and it is in the house. And as we pull up, I'm giving my on-scene report, you know, and we do blue cards. So I know when I start saying my on-scene report, and I've said people are like, oh, that sounds like blue card, you know? So I'm like on scene of a single story modular home, you know, with a working fire in the rear, pulling an inch and three quarters, whatever. Do my whole on-scene. As I'm taking command, as I'm getting on a scene report, I see the front door open up, and a woman steps out, and she's looking like, what's all this commotion?
What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. And I get out, and mind you, I'm wearing my brush gear, because we grabbed brush gear as we left. So now I'm like in the middle of trying to take my brush gear off, get into my turnouts and go to work. And I'm like, come with me, ma'am. Come with me. You need to come out of your house. And there was a sheriff's deputy that came up, and she's like, oh my God, there's a fire back here. And I'm like, ma'am, your house is on fire. She turns around, she runs right back inside.
Oh, wow.
So we're like, great. So now I'm like running to the front door. Like I'm literally wearing my station pants, because I haven't gotten into my turnouts yet, because I'm just like, get out of the house. So I right. run up to the front door with the deputy. I'm like, man, you need to get out. And she's like, I can't, my babies. And so the deputy's like, I'll get her. So I run out, start getting turned out. And now the other two firefighters are pulling me into the scene. I'm telling them, get your brush stuff off, get your structure gear off. Here we go. So my engineer's pulling hand lines. Everybody's, you know, busier than a one-legged man in a, you know, butt kicking contest, you know. So
right on.
So we're getting after, we're pulling lines. And mind you, I'm kind of seeing everything as we're coming up. I see toys. I see a trampoline. I see evidence that there is, in fact, children at this home. So we go in, because we're like, all right, we need to get these kids out of here, because the fuel loading at this house, I'd also known this house before, because this was the third time there had been a structure fire at this house. And this house it's a hoarder house. And so I'm already got that in the back of my mind. Like, this is probably going to go defensive. Once we get, you know, depending on how quickly we can get a knockdown on this. But if we can't get on this quick, this is not a place we're dying over. So we go in there. the deputy gets her out and she just keeps screaming, "My babies, my babies, my babies." So we're going in, we're searching. As we make our way in, we start heading down the hallway. Like I said, it's like paths of sure. just garbage. Typically. We start making our way down the hall. Oh yeah. Start making our way down the hallway. You can see that there's a working fire in the back bedroom. The smoke is banking down. We're starting to get high heat. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, one, how are these kids not coming out already when mom was screaming all this stuff? So as we're making our way back, we start getting pushed down from heat. We can see a fire in the back. I get radioed from my engineer outside, and he lets me know there's no kids home. She's talking about her bird, her two cats, and her dog.
Gotcha.
And so we're like, okay. You know, we're like, all right, well, now we know we're not looking for people. So we start to make an attack on the fire. And our efforts are not effective. You know, the environment is getting worse and worse. We have no help. It's just us. We don't have the ability to run, you know, a 2.5 in that area because we only have, you know, we're running off of tender water and stuff like that. So anyway, we start to back out and start to redeploy. And it is at this point, it's running through. The fuel loading is so high. It's running right throughout the whole house. Now, obviously, time is elapsing here. So as I'm telling the story, it's obviously not, it's longer than what it sounds like. But we make the decision to go defensive because this is a hoarder house. It's ripping. It's not worth dying over. Obviously, we got to change our tactics because what we're doing right now is not working. So we back out. We kind of reassess as I come out, we now have wind and the wind is shifting and the wind is blowing the fire. The wind is blowing the fire and the smoke down on us. And it's starting to run and spread and it's starting to cross the road. It's starting to head towards other houses, all this stuff.
Like the worst thing you could. Yeah. If you could add worst part to it. Yes,
exactly. And mind you, I'm thinking help is coming. So,
gotcha. I see where the breakdowns are starting to.
Yeah. Form. I'm thinking help is coming. We're running. Now we're getting low on water. We're getting low on air. We come out, we trade out air bottles. So now we're in our second air bottles. We have a second line deployed to the rear of the structure, knocking down where the bulk of the fire was hitting that. We have our line on the front of the structure. So it's me and a firefighter. And then I'm trying to watch because I have another firefighter by himself around the side, around the east side of the structure. I'm on the north side of the structure. And like I said, we got wind running around that firefighter on the east side. He's freaking just trying to manage to keep fire from going around him to go into these other structures. We think help's coming. Basically, to fast forward a bit, I had balanced it to a first alarm. I had told him that we went defensive. What happened was when I asked for all of those, all the help, they dispatched a single engine company with a brush truck, and that was it.
Just a lost in translation type, basically.
Yeah, it should. Yeah, and it was this was something that we had dealt with. I mean, there was many times with this dispatch where I would call for a rescue. You know, hey, I need a rescue, an ambulance, whatever, and clear them, clear them, clear them. They're not answering. I'd go 5 minutes and then I would call them on the rig cell phone and they'd pick up the phone. Hey, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, hey, this is Brent on engine, whatever, blah, blah. Been trying to get a hold of your radio. Oh, really? Here, give me a radio check and do a radio check. Oh, I hear you loud and clear. I'm like, yeah, imagine that. You know, they're probably like, oh, shoot, turn it up, you know? But right. Anyway, so there was a big breakdown. It took forever to get help. The second truck didn't get there for 35 minutes.
Oh, wow.
We finally end up, and also during that, they can't really hear much of my radio transmissions until they get close because they have to switch over to the other system. And so by the time they get there, they think they're coming to a brush fire.
Right.
And then they get there and they realize it's not a brush fire, it's a structure fire. Anyway, so as we continue and resources come in, we run out of water subsequently with our engine. We are out of air packs, but out of air bottles. We have no air and we're in a bad spot. Now we are an exposure. So I'm notifying command. Hey, because command, a BCS showed up and take command from me. All that stuff has happened. Sorry. I know I'm
No, no, you're good.
Making it longer.
Sounds like a fire. sounds like a fire scene. So we all follow.
Yeah. So when the BC got there, he took command for me. I let him know. He made me, you know, North Sector or whatever, blah, blah. And as we, and so I let him know, hey, we're low on water, we're low on air bottles. He's like, yep, we're going to get you water as soon as we can, as soon as we get a tender here. He's getting more units coming now because he's calling on his cell phone because where we're at, even the radios to be up to our normal dispatch, the towers aren't there. So he's calling on his cell phone like, hey, this is worst case scenario, you know, whatever. He's calling people, telling them we need the units, whatever. So they're dispatching via cell phones. So everybody comes up. Anyway, we run out of water. We run out of air bottles. I let them know, hey, we're going to have to retreat out of our spot. Like we are in a bad position because now the fire has spread. The fire has spread past us. It hopped the road. It took off and went towards another home to the north. It caught that other home to the north on fire, which one of the other responding trucks was able to knock down. So they were able to save that house. It was mostly just the exterior that house had damage. But while we were backing out, again, mind you, it's 100 and death outside. We're out of air bottles. Fire has gone around us, and now the fire is backing towards a shed that was on the north side of our truck. Well, inside of this shed was nothing but firewood, basically lumber and firewood. So this shed catches on fire. That shed ultimately is right up against the fire truck. Well, before this, we had made the call, we're backing out. So when we're backing our engine out, I'm backing my engineer like, come on, come on, come on. Well, there's a power pole. The power pole is on fire. It falls.
Oh yeah.
With live wires right behind the engine. We can't get out. So now I'm like, okay, this is just not our day. So we're grabbing, I'm like, you know, the truck, in my mind, I'm letting command know, hey, we got lines down. Our truck is trapped. We need somebody there now. It's an exposure. This truck is going to burn. Command's like, do not let that truck burn. I'm like, what do you want me to do?
I got no water. I got no air.
I got no water. I got no air. We have no help. You know, the other units that are here are already engaged in other spots. We're still waiting for more trucks. Unless you can break somebody free, this is going to get real bad. One of the other trucks, they ended up pulling their line all the way across. Well, we had to abandon. So we got out of there because the fire was just ripping. And then that shed was just blowing. And so we had to get out because also, so how this setup was, where this house was, it was kind of like in a bowl. There was mountains around it. It was kind of in a bowl. So it was just everything. It was just holding that heat. Yep. And so as we pull out, we head up to the road. I hear that truck that pulled their line across. They came across a driveway and a wash over to where they were at. They were able to get their line there. And when they got there, I heard them say, be advised that truck is on fire. And I'm just like, you know, like, yeah, yeah, you know, it's like the worst thing ever. And then I'm also feeling like I'm literally dying. So, a water tender gets there, you know, another truck gets there. They end up being able to, the truck sustained significant fire damage. It was a total loss. They were able to put that fire out. I myself and another firefighter, were transported, for heat exhaustion. Mine ended up being a rhabdo. Mm-hmm. So, had a couple days there at the hospital. That sucked.
No doubt about it.
That sucked. You know, it was super humbling. I learned a ton. Obviously I gave you a lot of bits and pieces of that story, but it was super humbling. I learned a lot. I felt like, you know, a huge failure. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, sure.
No, here I am an acting captain, you know, we go to a fire and, you know, I fell into some traps and, you know, I learned a ton from that, things that I can guarantee that I will never do again. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. So, you know, and you can, it's very easy to fall into traps, and I saw the traps that I fell into, and, you know, the trigger points in my mind now it changed me. And the greatest thing I think through all that was my fire chief at the time, he had 47 years in the fire service, just a fireman. And he was actually on vacation when it happened. So he found out when he got back. You know, I saw him and I said, hey, chief, sorry, you know? And he's like, what are you apologizing for? And I said, because we didn't go back to the station in the same truck that we came in. He's like, did everybody go home? I said, yeah, everybody went home. He's like, then I don't care. He's like, that's what we got insurance for. He's like, did you learn anything? And I said, I learned a ton. And he said, all right, well, then it's not a failure. He's like, it's only a failure if you didn't learn from it. So
that's a hell of a, yeah, dude, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. And it was awesome. And then he made a joke. He's like, you know what? He's like, insurance is going to give us the money for the price of that truck brand new. He's like, we were going to surplus that thing in a couple of years and probably get 10 grand.
Right.
So he's like, Mr. Brightside. Yeah. He's like, I should be thanking you.
Hey, dude, that sounds like a hell of a leader. So it sounds like you're a lucky person in that regard.
Man. Yeah. So, yeah, man, it was a crazy experience. And like I said, I learned some traps. I learned some things as a leader or as a captain that, you know, best way to get experience is experience. And I got it there. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. All right. I'm going to get back to the audience here. Someone, Carlos Segura said, wow, no mustache. I didn't know. Hashtag mind blown. Do you get that a lot that they think it's real?
Oh man, it is insane how many people think the even people that I meet in person, like at FDIC, I'd see people, they're like, man, which by the way, I feel like a complete buffoon wearing a fake mustache at FDIC the whole time, but it's fun. But guys are like, man, I thought this whole time I thought it was fake, but now I see you in person, it really is real. And I'm just like, yeah, it's real from Amazon. That's
right. All right, question coming at you from Matt Sleet.
Yeah.
Matt Sleet, hopefully recovering well. But Matt wants to know, does the firefighter Fenton voice ever, in quotation marks, accidentally come across the radio at 3 a.m.?
Oh, sure. That's the funny thing is the dispatchers, you know, they all see me on the roster, so they know who it is.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, I've had, it doesn't even have to be 3 a.m. It could just be a dumb call in the middle of the day, and I'm we do snake removals at my department sometimes. And okay. So people will call for rattlesnakes at their house. And I've been known to take command of rattlesnake scenes, you know, give a full on scene report. And so yes, the Fenton voice does come out sometimes.
Jason Tilson said that call was a shit show, but not by your doing. Don't know if you
Jason
know
Tilson. Yep.
All right.
I work with Tilly.
Fair enough. Lawrence Wadsworth said, man, Rabdo kicked my ass last year. It's the worst. Marco Isom said, sounds like you did the best possible job you could with the resources you had. And Josh Davis, I love this question. He wants to know, what is your biggest takeaway from that experience, if you could melt it down?
Oh, man.
Feel free to share multiple. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to melt you down to one.
Yeah. No, yeah. So, As a supervisor, what I learned was don't confuse time on the job for experience. Meaning, with members of my crew, I had some members on my crew that performed, you know, as expected and above, and there was some of my crew that I expected a lot more of, and it just didn't go that way, and which was kind of mind blowing because. I had a seasoned crew, but like I said, everybody did the best they could. But that was a big takeaway that I learned was don't let time on the job be mistaken for experience. You got to know your crew's abilities, their decision-making capabilities, things like that. You want to have crew members that can make decisions, if for whatever reason you're not with them. You want them to be able to make good decisions, you know, and sometimes some decisions just weren't made that I expected, or I'm like, really, I have to tell you that, you know what right. I mean? Like that should be automatic. And then also, I fell into the trap of like, you know, we show up on a scene, we fight fire, we put our stake in the ground. This is where we're at. We're not moving. We don't lose. And there's nothing wrong with reevaluating. I mean, you should be continuously reevaluating what you're doing. And whether or not it's working, and if it's not working, you got to change it because, you know, the only thing that's going to be consistent is that the fire is just going to continue to get bigger, you know, until it burns everything up. And then I guess it'll eventually go out, but, right, but no. You don't want to be part of what it burns up. And yeah, so just continuously reevaluating that. And there is no shame in saying where we're at was good, but now it's not. So let's move, let's reevaluate, let's reengage. And, you know, so that was a big, I think those were the two biggest takeaways for me was that, and yeah, just don't fall into those traps and just stand behind your decisions. You know, it's hard when you roll up to a house and you see, you know, we can make a stop and then it just doesn't go that way. And it doesn't make sense why it's not going that way. And you get caught in that, like, no, we can do this. We can do this. We can do this. And that was a trap that I fell into, because when I declared defensive, you know, I identified, you know, you're supposed to identify what is lost, write it off, protect exposures. I knew what was lost. I half wrote it off because I would go to protect exposures and be like, but we can still do this.
We can still, yeah. No,
we can still do this. Almost, and yeah. And it bit me and it did. And, you know, there's a reason why that's written about in books, you know, because it bites you.
And you've lived it, and now it really, yeah, no doubt about it. Easy to talk about for everybody, but once you lived it, it's a way different story.
Sure.
Andrew McGinn said, ever been on a call and the civilian asks you where the stash is, or they say, man, you look familiar?
Multiple times, yes. And I would say as of recently, it is happening more and more, and it's cool. It's funny. You know, sometimes people, I shouldn't say multiple times, but I have been on a call, and I know Jason from Firebird, he's had this happen too, where we're like on a scene, on a call, treating a patient, doing something, and somebody comes up and is like, hey, you're done. It's like, not the time right now. Like, I'm actually a firefighter. Yeah, I'm actually doing CPR my job right now. I'm actually doing my job right now. So, like, I would love to say hi, but, you know, just give me a minute.
This person has no pulse. I got to pay attention to him right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Jason Schneider, and we're getting a lot of questions coming at you from the audience. So, is it difficult to balance your comedic side with your responsibilities as an officer?
No, I don't think it is. I think that I would say I have comedy driven leadership, if you will.
Okay.
I you know, nobody wants to work somewhere where you can't have fun, and I. Like, you know, I always, that's my biggest thing is like, we're going to do our job. Like, my expectations are that, you know, your job, you know, it well, and that you do it. And that we have fun doing that. And so, there's probably times when I make a joke when I shouldn't, you know, but whatever. I think everybody does that. You know, I'll make a joke and be like, oh God, forgive me for that. That was bad. You know, but no, I don't have a hard time balancing. I make it a point that I love to make content. I love being firefighter Fenton. But I also recognize that I am, in a leadership role, and that it's important for me to lead, to prove myself as a leader that I'm not just like, you know, sure, I'm funny and I get written off a lot, but sure. It's happened my whole life.
We're
get written off like, guy's just a clown. He's an idiot. Like, just because I'm funny and just because I'm nice doesn't mean I'm weak. It doesn't mean I'm stupid. You know, it's like the whole don't mistake the kindness for weakness kind of thing.
Right.
Like,
right.
I know my job. I know it well, I do it well. And I take care of my people and I go to bat for my people. And just because like I'm pulling punches and making jokes and laughing doesn't mean that, I'm also not in the next breath going to go to bat for somebody or not going to, in the next, you know, instance be taking command of a fire scene or something. So, or be able to, you know, my crew knows that we're going to have a good time, but they, you know, it's just like every supervisor says, you know, don't make me do my job. Like they know what to expect. So I think for me, I just try to keep it consistent. So they know what to expect from me. There's no guessing game. Like, oh, he's always fun in games until it's not. It's like, they know where the line is and I think we have a great time.
I love it, man. No, I love the answer too, man. And I love the part about don't mistake my kindness for weakness. Don't mistake my love for having fun for weakness or lack of discipline or lack of leadership ability, man. And that's a strong message that anybody can resonate with. I have a couple comments I wanted to read to you, which is, Yeah, and you brought up Patton, so I'll bring up Patton in a minute. But I wanted to say Andrew Starnes, Chief Starnes said, I greatly appreciate how you share your faith and keep it clean. My daughter loves your videos, and you made her day by meeting her at FDIC. And he brought it up, and Chief Starnes is one of the greatest people on earth. But 100%, man, I watched you and Patton. Like, every time I walked past the fire department booth, which is right there at a perfect T-junction, there was a line of like 30 people waiting to take pictures with you guys. And no matter what, you guys had smiles on your faces, and you made every single person come up there feel like a rock star. Dude, I told Jason, I was like, dude, you guys have a gift, man. Like, 100%. It was no fatigue. It was, like, legit.
Yeah, it blows my mind that, like, I come up with these ridiculous videos in this room or sitting on the toilet or 2 seconds after coming back from a call, and I'm like, I'm making a video about that exact right. thing right there, you know? But just the fact that it has resonated with so many people, resonated with so many people, and I've been able to just meet people from all over, and everybody, it just blows my mind when people come up and be like, you have no idea, you know, your videos have gotten me through some dark times and things like that. And like, you know, Chief brought up, you know, faith and it being clean, and that's on purpose. You know, I am a Christian and everything is on purpose like that. I like to create moments where guys can sit down with their families, guys, girls, whoever can sit down with their families and talk about, you know, if the family doesn't understand why that is funny, they can explain that to them and they can all laugh together. And I love to do that. And I love hearing, I never expected someone to come up to me and say that my videos got them through something like that. And so I respect the platform and I respect the people that I meet because they're real people. And I'm right. I'm just like them. I just film stupid videos with a fake mustache.
I'm telling you, like, you were telling that, and you, and 100%, man, the other day I was in a bad mood and I don't even remember why I got on my phone, but the chick eating the tomatoes while you're trying to enjoy your coffee, dude. And for whatever reason, I started laughing because I just the editing was perfect. The tomato seeds on your face was perfect. It was great. So I started laughing in the middle of your answer right there because I started thinking of that. And that's your gift, man, is you bring that ability. It is powerful. Now I'm catching up on comments, and I know you get this a lot because this is something that always affects me, but you have impacted firefighters and first responders in general in a positive way for sure, man. And that's, it's crazy when you get those messages like, thank you for that. And you're like, thank me. I'm just, I'm making a joke, but I get
it. It's crazy. It's crazy to just.
And Nolan Christmas,
people say that.
He really captures it here. He says, those stupid videos with a fake mustache are an awesome piece of the fire service. And that's the crazy part, is that you are capturing the slice of the fire service with that. And it's going to be forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that?
Somebody told me, dude, you, like, it was FDIC 2 years ago. Guy came up and he said, you're like legit changing the fire service. He's like, you and Jason. I'm like, I was like, no. And he's like, no, for real. He's like, one, he's like, people don't want to end up on your guys' pages, which I'm just like, all right. Like, it's all in fun. Everybody right. has a bad day. I just told you about my worst day.
With the freaking chin straps again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And so, but you know, it's just, it is crazy to think like, yeah, I mean, these videos are out there forever. And what's crazy is like, I made that My Knee Hurts Now video 10 years ago in, it's like 11 years ago now. Anyway, but I made that video so long ago and I still get people saying like, oh my gosh, I just saw your My Knee Hurts Now video. I'm an EMT student or I'm what, and it just, I'm just like, wow, that's crazy because it was so long ago.
Right.
But it's still exactly what happens. And it's just a whole new generation of people. I'm just like, man, it's overwhelming to think about the reach that it has and just kind of how, what it's turned into. It's crazy.
No, it perpetuates. And it's, and I think that might be part of you and Jason. I mean, I don't want to exclude at all because, It's timeless.
Yeah.
PSI seems safe is timeless. My knee hurts is timeless. I don't even remember the one you're like, I was trying to remember. But anyway, okay. William Van Brenner wants to know, and I'll sit here and go over your individual bits one by one, and people will listen to me describe them to you, and that's not what... But anyway, William Van Brenner said, did the incident you had as an acting captain slow you down from wanting to promote? How did that affect you in that regard?
No, it didn't. It didn't slow me down. Honestly, it made me want to tell people about it. Like, we did... trainings, and you know, I had the opportunity to tell other guys about the mistakes that I made, the things that I learned from that, you know, and like I said, hindsight's always 20/20. So in the moment, I made the best decisions that I knew and the best things possible, and never knew that it was going to go that way. And it probably, and even if I made other decisions, it may have still turned out the exact same way. But it didn't slow me down. It definitely made me do a lot of reflecting. I remember talking to my wife about that. And I'm just like, you know, dude, is this like I freaking had a fire truck burn up, you know, like, should I even be doing this? Like, should I even be sitting in that right front seat? You know, it made me do a lot of reflecting. And she said, I don't think that has anything, to do with that. She's like, I think how you respond to what happened is going to be indicative of whether or not you belong in that right front seat, which for me, I was like, that's huge. And then even, like I said, talking to my fire chief too, he's like, you're not the first person to have that happen to. You're not going to be the last person to have that happen to. He's like, we work in a field where crap happens, and guess what? It happened. So
and the fire gets a vote. People may say, you know, but the fire gets a vote. Now, we can prepare for it, absolutely, and we can learn from it. That's the biggest. So I'm gonna rapid fire here and go. What is your favorite topic, like, to lampoon or bust chops on when you put on the big red mustache? Do you have a favorite, man, or is it just completely random?
A lot of times it's random, but I love to just highlight the monotony things, you know, whether the system abuser, you know, the frequent flyer that you run on all the time, or just the little things that I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint one specific thing. It is pretty
universal truths.
It's the universal truths. It's the one thing where, like, if I can create the moments that people go, oh my gosh, I have been that, or that is so-and-so, you know, that's the one thing. This job attracts the same people. And it's like, out of all the people I've met from visiting stations and people and whatever, you walk into a fire station and I'm like, that's that guy. That's that guy. That guy's probably me. That's this, you know, it's all the same people. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just this job attracts the same people all over the world.
And no doubt about it, man. How many bits have you recorded that have never seen the light of day? Or is it a thing where you just put out everything you make, or is it a thing where you're like pretty selective?
No, I pretty much put out everything I make. I realize, and that's kind of how I stay true to myself, is I just put them out because I think they're funny. So right. If I think they're funny, whatever. I realize that not all of them are going to hit. Some are going to miss, but I think all of them are funny. So I pretty much put out everything I make. I do have some. I actually just found one today. I was working on a video for my department, and I was just listening to music while I was working on the video. And this song came up, and I was like, oh shoot. Like, I recorded a song and made it, but I never made the video. I'm like, gotcha. I need to make this video. Like, I have the song recorded and done. I never made a video to it. And I found that one and then started to look through my computer, and I realized I have like three other ones. So I've got some, you know, having the four kids really slowed down making the music video, but they're coming.
No, we just had Mando. Mando was recent. So yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Okay. What is your favorite comedy bit that you have done, music or mustache wise? Either way.
My favorite, you talked about it when we were talking earlier. My favorite music video that we've done has been the Station 2.
The high production value, everything. Yes, dude. That is
artistically
classic.
The singing with my wife and I, like, I just thought that was the one that I was the most happy with just how it came out. And then it's just poetic justice that when I got promoted, I'm at station two.
Station two. Beautiful.
So, and then for the Fenton one, the caller asked for no lights and sirens.
Yeah. Yes.
He's like, oh, he does he? Ah, yeah. That's my favorite one.
All right. Firefighter, paramedic, also wildland, right? You do, I mean, basically, boom, boom, boom. Favorite part of the job for you?
Favorite part of the job? Oh, man. Honestly, I love the, I love station life. Like, I love just wrapping around the station with, wrap around the dinner table with guys and just telling jokes and telling stories. And, the camaraderie for me is awesome. Right now I'm on a short stint, on a 40 hour stint doing some video projects for my department.
Okay.
And I was telling my wife last night, I'm like, I went walking the other night and I was thinking, I was like looking through my phone, who can I call? Like, I need to talk to someone. I told her, I'm like, it's not good for me to not be around people. And you could probably tell just from here right now, I'm gonna shut up. So, but that's good for me. I love the camaraderie, the station life. And honestly, for me, my favorite thing is to be able to talk to new people. I love talking to new guys. I have a probationary guy in my truck right now, and I love being able to, I'm an open book. I'm probably a little more transparent than I should be. I tell people everything, but I love to be able to tell people things that I've learned. I love to be able to hear other people's stories and hear the things that they've learned. And I just love to pass on that knowledge. And my favorite thing that I've done thus far in my career was I had the opportunity about 7 years ago. I went down to the training academy and I was a mentor. And that was just awesome, because it was like you were the nice retraining officer. You know, you got the RTOs and they're yelling, screaming, do whatever. But then you got the mentor and you're like the buddy, and you get come alongside of them. And, you know, and you just it was just. That was awesome. That was such a rewarding experience. I got more out of it, I think, than the recruits probably did.
Any special? I'm trying to figure out how to say this question right. Like, any special comedy, or is it strictly off the cuff? Do you have anything special built coming? Any plans? Anything weird to look out for?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely gonna. I'm like in this. This is like I kind of we. Move some of our kids out of a room, and now I've got like a studio. So I'm going to be coming out with some different style of content, a little bit, some longer form. I'm like kicking around the idea of doing a podcast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I don't
would
know.
Would it be Brent or would it be Fenton? I'm just asking.
It would be me. It would be Brent, okay. Yeah. And, Fenton would definitely make an appearance on there, but like, I'm kind of tossing around that idea of actually, doing that. And having my wife be with me on it, those kind of things. So I don't know. The thing is like, I realize that these take an incredible amount of time, and that's one thing that I don't have is an incredible amount of time to do it.
No, especially on the job. Well. Especially on the job. Yeah.
Yeah. And to do it correctly and do it well, but also to be able to balance family and all the Fenton stuff and everything else. I'm also the PIO for my department. There's a lot of things that I have to balance, and you know, my family is number one, takes priority, but no, so I've got that. I definitely have music videos coming up. There's going to be a music video. It's going to be, I'll probably post it July 17th. And that's because my department does, their annual banquet. Okay. We haven't had it for the last couple of years because of the Rona, but, it's right back. And so I'm making a music video for that. I think people the theme on that one is people who aren't pulling over the lights and sirens, right, not pulling off, to the right. Yes, so that one, I'm actually very excited for this one. It's going to be, it's going to be very dramatic. So I'm excited for it.
I like it, man. I love it. So, I love it. Yeah. Nagley said, interested in coming to the Orlando Fire Conference in February of 23. So there we go. Just got a random from Stephen Nagley throwing at you, but I had to read it to you because why not?
Oh yeah. Man, yeah. That's one thing that I've learned is there are so many fire conferences. And
Orlando's one of the best. And it's been around. Yeah, this celebrated 20. I think this year was 20.
Oh, so, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I got iced out. That was the whole thing. I was like, going to fly down there for the 20th. Because it's always been hands-on for 20 years. And then they finally did lectures, and I was going to go lecture. And then the mother of all ice storms said, no, you're not. And so,
we don't have that problem here.
Now, your partner in crime, Jason Patton, man, his style, your style, two different styles. Do you guys feed, I mean, obviously when you guys do stuff together, it's awesome. I love the Old West shootout when you guys, and when I was watching, the first time I watched, I'm like, why is Jason holding that little fog nozzle? And then I'm like, why is Firefighter Fenton holding a little fog? And then the end of it when he's like, smooth bore, you know what I'm saying? It was all done intentionally, but I didn't realize it the first time I watched it, but it was beautifully done. But my point is, how much do you guys feed off each other? Have you ever thought about doing the green screen type stuff he does? Has he ever thought about coming in and being, you know, like how much do you guys collaborate, basically, is what I'm saying?
We talk all the time. We talk almost every week. So we collaborate a lot. We bounce each other ideas off each other all the time. Like, hey, I'm making this video. I think this is funny. What do you think? Or what do you think? Or like, yeah, he'll send the video to me and I'll watch it, or I'll send him a video of mine and he'll watch it and be like, would you change anything? Would you add anything? So we get along really, really well. And that's the cool thing is like our styles are, we are very, very, very different.
Yes.
But we feed off of each other very well. He's an incredible, script writer. He does really well. Like he writes the scripts for like the fire department coffee videos and things like that. And I'm getting able to branch out and help do that as well. And so, it's like a muscle, man. You know, it's like I write my certain type of comedy, but, scripts are completely different, you know, writing scripts is totally different. So it's like, it's just kind of unlocking that part of my brain and working out that muscle that makes it that much stronger. But it's really great. We get along, really, really well. And we collaborate all the time. We talk, like I said, almost every week, and just kind of bounce ideas off each other. We share ideas, and so
and what you guys do, fire department coffee and everything, is awesome. Andrew McGinn, I got one more. What and who helped you decide to start posting videos? Like, what was the kickoff?
You know, I always love making people laugh. I was always really into comedy, really into music growing up. That's how my wife and I met, was doing music together. And so, you know, hearing people say, man, you should have been a comedian. You missed your calling. I started thinking like, man, did I miss my calling? And my department did a banquet every year for like awards and firefighter of the year and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And sometimes those nights can get a little stale, you know, when people are up there talking, it's like somebody talking after, you know, person after person talking. And so they were like, we need to have something that kind of breaks it up. And so, that's when I was actually coming back from a call with my partner, Dave, in the rescue. And it was literally the My Knee Hurts Now call. And we came back from the call, and the Lady Antebellum song came on the radio while we were driving down the freeway. And I said, it's a quarter after one, calling 911 cause my knee hurts now. And he started dying laughing. And then I was like, I should do a song. And I just sat there, wrote that whole thing down. It went, and then made that video, and it blew up overnight, got almost a million views like overnight, which was crazy.
Right.
And then, I kept making videos. I only made like one video a year for like 7 years, after that.
Really?
And yeah. And I just didn't know. I didn't know social media. I didn't capitalize on that momentum. And then, Scott, from Fireman 323, Scott reached out and said, hey man, I think you're really missing a boat. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, I've been a fan of yours since you did My Knee Hurts Now all that time ago. And every one of your videos has been funny since. And I think you should try and do the short form stuff. He's like, I think you got the chops for it. You should try. And that was in November of 2018. And I think I had like 300 followers or something like that on Instagram. And it's just, I wasn't really active. Sure. And, I was talking to my wife and I said, you know what? I'm going to challenge myself and see if I can't put out one piece of comedy or one piece of content, every day of December in 2018. She's like, go for it. And I did it. And by the end of December, I had like 3,300, I gained like 3,000 in a month. And then I just kept going and just I went all out and just kept going. And it's
content is king, man. And yeah.
Oh man. And it's been great. I've been slow this year. I've just been kind of having a little mental break because it's,
sure. Dude, it's hard. I can only imagine if you tried to keep that pace. Holy crap.
Yeah.
You would melt down.
Yeah. It's hard. And it's like, I mean, making the content is one thing. Like I enjoy doing that, but for me, it does take time. And I just want to make sure that I'm keeping my priorities straight. You know, I don't want my family to suffer because I'm, you know, trying to go all.
That might be your most powerful message. You know what I'm saying? Because you are a very successful influencer, for lack of a better term. I don't know what you call it inside the fire sphere. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not the. But yeah, 100%, man. It's easy to lose sight.
Yeah. I say I'm an internet douche, but yeah.
The idea. I love that. Okay. Now, I like to always ask my guests, book or books that you think firefighters should be. I don't know if you're a reader or not a reader. I have no idea, but I always ask, book or books that you think firefighters should be reading.
I need to get better at reading books, like the Bible. That's a great one.
Bible's not a bad answer.
Buddy to Boss. That's a good one.
Solid.
That's the biggest, I wouldn't say struggle, but it is a struggle. I mean, it's like, it's just learning that role, learning from being a firefighter for almost 20 years. And now I'm a captain. It's learning that role of buddy to boss. But, and for me, it's not even so much that. For me, it's really like, I don't want to make my guys look bad because I'm sorry. I'm kind of doing like a little rabbit trail real quick, but like,
no.
We had a call. One of my first calls as an actual officer, it was like a check flooding. We get to a house and it was like an electrician was up in the attic, and this house was a large house. They were sprinkler, and the electrician lost his footing, stepped on that sprinkler pipe, snapped it. I mean, it is flooding, catastrophically flooding this house. I mean, there's 4 inches of water. It's like a 5,000 square foot house, huge house. And it's just, oh my gosh. So, and we're on scene for 3 seconds and I'm on a ladder up in the attic and I'm like, what am I doing right now while I'm up there? Because I'm looking down and like, you know, there's a firefighter, there's like one firefighter and they're looking up at me and I'm just like, what am I doing right now? Cause I was just so used to being in that worker bee mode. And that's not to say that I'm a working officer as well. Like I'm not going to sit there and not work, but
it's a balance, dude. There's a balance. Oh, yeah. Because you can actually rob them of their growth. You can rob them of their ability to fail. You can rob them of their ability to excel. And you don't even realize you're doing it. Oh, sorry.
Exactly. No. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Because I remember special calling the ladder truck, and they came with some of their salvage stuff. And we have squeegees, and they had a bunch of squeegees and things and salvage stuff. And so they were helping us because it was all hands on deck in this house. And my buddy Jim, he's the ladder captain. Jim was talking crap to one of my guys, was like, oh, you too good? You can't do anything? You're going to make your captain work? And I realized, I was like, that's on me. That wasn't him. I didn't even give him the opportunity to work. I just went to work. And I was like, I got to like back up a minute. Like, here you go. Because I don't want to make them look bad. Like you said, I don't want to.
No, yeah. We call it Major Nozzle Hog because Major is a company officer in art, but it's called Major Nozzle Hog or Captain Nozzle Hog, whatever you want to call it. But it's the same. Like, give me the nozzle, kid. You can't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, 100%. Dude, I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we have a thing on the scrap. It's called the next 5 questions for firefighters. It used to be the 5 questions for firefighters. And after 100 episodes or so, all the low-hanging fruit was taken and all the answers had been given. So we advanced it to the next 5 questions for firefighters. Here's the deal. There are no right or wrong answers. They are completely your opinion. The points are arbitrary. They're passed out by me. So my question for you, Brent Fenton, is are you ready for the next 5 questions for firefighters?
Yes.
Here we go. Number one, what single characteristic makes the difference between a run-of-the-mill firefighter and the top-tier go-to badass firefighter?
Oh, man. What single characteristic? In my opinion, I think humility, being being humble. I think somebody being somebody who's just about it, doesn't talk about it, is just about it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I always think, you know, if you're on fire, you don't have to tell somebody you're on fire. They just see it, you know, yeah. They just know it. So it's like, you don't have to, don't talk about how awesome you are. Just be awesome. And people just see that, and I just think just be about it, be humble, be nice. That's the biggest thing. Be nice. It's not that hard. It's free. It's not that hard. You never know who's going to be your boss one day.
Dude, I will tell you this. I love the answer, humility. I love the answer, be humble. And then you said something like, hey, if you're on fire, you don't have to tell people you're... One of my favorite things to tell people is, hey, if you're rich, you don't have to tell people you're rich. If you're tough, you don't have to tell people you're tough. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And dude, so 100% max points on number one because the answers. Number two, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice as a rookie, what would it be?
Don't put the concentrated dish soap in the dishwasher. That's a real story too. if I could go back, that's true.
A lot of suds.
I filled the station up with suds. Yeah. If I could go back, I would say, don't pass up on any opportunities. Don't pass up on any opportunities out of fear that you're not ready.
Mm.
Just do it. Cause I passed up. I got into the first captain's promotional exam and I honestly, I can't really say it was bad. I would just say my reasoning for passing up on it. I don't necessarily like, I was just like, I don't think I'm ready. I was worried about what if I get it, and that shouldn't have been the reason of what, like, it was honestly, it was just fear. Like, don't be afraid. Just don't be afraid to fail and don't be afraid to succeed. Just do it, you know, and learn it, because I was going to test for captain. I think I had 6 years on, 7 years on, which was seven because you had to have 7 years on. And I just felt like I didn't have enough time on. And I was just like, man, so I was just like, I'm not going to do it. And I don't regret it, but I would have, if nothing else, I would have gained experience from even just the process of it.
Right on.
So yeah, I would say I would tell myself, just do it. Don't be afraid of it. Who cares if you're ready for it? You can always get ready.
I'm telling you this right now. I don't know if I'd give you max points on that answer before yesterday, but yesterday I sat in my chief's office and had an hour-long conversation with a young firefighter who wasn't sure if, you know, that basically was his whole rationalization was what you just walked through. I love the answer, man. And I love the advice, and I'm going to make him listen to this because it won't be coming from me. So, I love that. Do not pass any opportunity. Max points. Number three, what is your favorite training drill?
My favorite training drill. My favorite training drill. I love to do search and rescues. I love to do search and rescue drills where you black people out. We actually just did it the other day at my station where a lot of times we'll do a skills course and then do a search and rescue. So that way you're tired. You're exhausted. So just get yourself in the conditions where you're going to be working hard, breathing hard, and search and rescue and what we like to do is you're looking for a down or you're just doing a search, and then we always pull somebody and it's a down firefighter, but you're blacked out and you're masked. You have to do cup link recognition, and then making sure you got tools in your pocket because you're going to get tangled up in some wires. And we do everything where we, you know, have where you got to pull off your air pack while you're still breathing air and push it through and slide through a small opening, get in, package a patient. And then like when you get in there, once we get like the most tired, what I like to do is like when I notice that like my firefighters like smoke, like give me a mayday.
Right.
You know,
actually use the cognitive abilities while you're just completely mm-hmm. exhausted.
Yeah.
I love that.
Get thinking while you're exhausted because that's just, I like that. I mean, yeah, it's the low frequency, high risk stuff, but you have to be on it because there's a reason why we don't do minimum company standards for difficulty breathings. You know what I mean? Because it's, 100%. You know, so
I love that, and especially the final answer. 100% crushing it. Max points. Number four, what mistake have you learned the most from in your fire service career?
Learned the most from in my fire service career? I would just say, you know, that fire. It's hard to even say like that was a huge mistake, because like I said, it just was the cards were stacked against me, but I know I made mistakes for sure. But I would say the thing that is getting trapped in that we can get this, we can win, you know, we can do this, and then just making assumptions, I guess would be assumptions about, instead of just, cause I was a fairly new actor as well, and making assumptions that like, oh, they're good. You can't do that. You got to get out and train. You got to get out and pick people's minds and put them in difficult situations and see where they're truly at.
Love that, man. Love it. Number five, final question. The same question that's always come. Heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
I like the nozzle. Yeah.
Love the knob.
I love doing nozzle work, doing search. See, we don't do like the VES really on the, at least in the Phoenix automatic aid system.
Fair enough.
So, but yeah, like that for us, I mean, I've been on ladder trucks and vented. I love ladder work too. My truck, we always make the joke. We say that we're a Lingen because we are an engine, but we have saws, fans, extrication equipment. We have all the ladder equipment because where we're at, it's all hydrants, it's all streets, it's everything like that. So when we respond out of our area into the more rural areas, we will work as a ladder company. Where in our area, where my department's ladder is, our ladder is in the rural area because they co-man an engine. So if they're going to be first on scene of a fire, they're bringing an engine. We're going to come in and be the ladder. But if they come to one of our fires, we're going to be the engine. They're going to come in and be the ladder with the big stick, because also we won't operate our stick off-road.
Right on. So. Right on, man. And that makes the final answers. Officially 145 scraps in the book. Brent Fenton, if someone wants to get a hold of you, reach out to you, what's the best way to do so?
I'm on all the social medias, you know, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, you name it. Firefighter, it's at, or YouTube also, Firefighter Fenton. You just look it up at Firefighter Fenton. If you search Firefighter Fenton on YouTube, you'll find it. It's Firefighter Fent on Twitter, because Twitter's lame and won't let it me have that long of a name. but yeah, you can find me there, and you'll see all my stuff.
Dude, I can't tell you enough. Thank you for giving me your evening. And I know that my scheduling is terrible, so I had to cancel and then bring him back in, and he was more than gracious. So I can only say thank you for being so gracious. I'll do my housekeeping here at the end, which is go to firehousevigilance.com. Swag prices, plain and simple. I'm not making a big news announcement. Prices of everything are going up. So swag prices of hats, shirts, books, coins, etc. is all going up. Next week, the price increase is going. So I'm telling you this so that this week you can go buy before the prices go up. No choice in that matter. If you want something, grab it now. There is a private group on Facebook. It's not for everybody. It's only for the people that love the scrap, want to support the scrap, and want to be the insiders on how the scrap moves forward as far as guests, questions, and ways to improve it. If you want to get invited, go to firehousevigilance.com, support the scrap, you'll get invited. It's the vigilantes. It's for the insiders. It's for the scrappiest of the scrappers. Once a month, I go live and do a thing called the forum. The first one is next Tuesday. I'm excited to see how it turns out. Very informal. We'll discuss the future and all that stuff and brainstorm. I really look forward to it. I look forward to everybody. The scrap will always be free. It will always be out here, and it will always never be gated. But the vigilantes is something completely separate. What else have I got? Place your support. Yes, got it. Next up on the scrap. Average Jake, Robbie Owens. He's been in here tonight making comments. He's coming up next,
I believe it's Monday. Don't quote me because I can't see my whiteboard as I look over to the side. But Average Jake, Robbie Owens on Monday, followed by the first Vigilantes Forum on Tuesday, and then my man from Texas, Kevin Pfluger, coming on, and then Todd Shepard. So the scrap's loaded up all the way into July, and it's looking sweet. My brother, Brent Fenton, thank you so much for being a phenomenal guest.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Dude, it was a blast. Everybody, the audience, guys, your questions and comments is what makes this so special. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tone stays silent unless it's burning. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.